We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast. I am your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. It is officially not only draft week, but we are like a day away from this finally getting started. I'm so ready for it to get started. The rumors are just out of control at this point as far as the silliness going around. I've got my Adidas shirt on for the listeners partnership with Trevor Lawrence, of course, who's an Adidas guy now officially as of this morning. Had to represent that way. But we got a lot to get to, Mario. So I'm thinking we will go ahead, run through the first round, see what we're thinking as far as how 1 through 32 is going to shape up. And then we're going to get into a little bit of prop betting. For the second part of the episode, we're going to get into what's being offered on FanDuel and DraftKings as far as stuff that you can bet on for Thursday night and beyond. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It kind of adds another wrinkle, another layer to the draft watching experience. So we'll just kind of run through the order and, stop me if you think that, that there are a couple teams here and there that could very well be moving from their original spot. We won't spend too much time with the first overall pick. I think we can both agree that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the guy at Jacksonville. Yes.
Yeah. The Jaguars will probably use all 15 minutes of the clock, but yes, I think we can assume they'll take Lawrence at the last second.
Yeah. I think that'll be, like Roger Goodell directive to build some sort of, are the Jaguars having second thoughts? Are they having cold feet? But in reality, if it's not Trevor Lawrence, I think Twitter will officially break in a way that we haven't even seen.
All will. I think everyone will just try to figure out where Roger is and just go there at the same time, blame him. Because he's the last guy we see on the TV. We're like, oh, it's his fault.
Yep. Blame him right off the bat. Let's move on. Second pick, Jets. I think that's another one that's basically set in stone. I think it's going to be Zach Wilson. Again, that's another one that would be pretty shocking if it went any other way. It really does feel, again, like the draft starts at three.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets have to have at very least been telling everyone who would listen in media and even just like coaches around them, scouts around them, because that's been the line the whole time and there's never been even like a slight deviation from it. So when it seems that locked in, it probably is.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well. Would be very, very surprising for Zach Wilson to go anywhere but the New York Jets. So three is where it all really starts, Mario. And, we've gotten into this at varying degrees throughout the pre-draft process, basically ever since San Francisco went ahead and made the move all the way up to number three in the draft. And again, it feels like it's kind of down to either Mac Jones or Trey Lance. There was the report from Ian Rappaport on Monday, kind of echoing that sentiment. Does kind of seem like Mac Jones is going to be the pick, but I'm just kind of wondering if this is just one of the more elaborate smokescreens that we've seen executed in recent years, or if this really is a case where San Francisco is so full of themselves that they think that Mac Jones fitting in their system could be better than a guy like Justin Fields or Trey Lance.
Well, if you believe the Ian Rappaport thing from the other day, it's actually just Kyle Shanahan wants Mac Jones and the rest of the team, presumably John Lynch, wants Trey Lance. And I have no idea how, first of all, I don't know if that's true. It sounds plausible enough to me. I mean, Shanahan, Lynch, one of the two, maybe both, is really bad at evaluating talent. The 49ers have botched quite a few picks in peculiar ways that just were easily avoidable. And if Kyle Shanahan was behind it and if he wants to take Mac Jones, that would kind of make some past, puzzling choices make more sense, because the guy just doesn't know what he's doing as far as figuring out what players are good at or bad at. And if you're that kind of person, you probably would look at Mac Jones and just say like, oh yeah, he's the guy over these other guys. Justin Fields putting up just insane numbers at Ohio State, having the dual threat ability, Trey Lance having basically like a Josh Allen kind of like tool set, and look at that and then say, no, thank you both times. And give me the Andy Dalton, give me the, I don't know what Jones might be specifically. He should be pretty good or something. He's not terrible or anything, but he's not as good of a prospect as Tua was. And if we're not high on Tua at this point, why do we think Jones is better? I don't really know what it is that's supposed to be fueling this hype of his. But with Lance, I think it clearly makes more sense to go with him, because he's just got so much you can work with tools wise. And the whole deal with Shanahan, the whole selling point with Shanahan in the first place, is that he's going to scheme things so that playing quarterback is easier, so that playing receiver is easier. And if you're going to have a high median kind of line, a high baseline as an offense because of the system, then why wouldn't you seek exceptional traits that can be amplified by that system instead of just, by definition, one of the more replaceable guys? I don't really get it. But Shanahan did like C.J. Beathard a lot as a prospect, so, what can we rule out with the guy? I don't really know if it's responsible to assume he's just going to do something smart just because everybody else thinks it's an obvious choice.
Yeah, no, it's really puzzling, but it does feel like at the same time that, as of 30 hours or so until the NFL draft starts, maybe a little bit less than that, that Mac Jones is going to be the pick for San Francisco at three.
I'll still say Trey Lance. I mean, I can't believe, like, John Lynch may as well quit if he's not going to stand up to Shanahan this time. Shanahan is wrong.
Just, this is a good point.
Be a GM, man. Be it, or just get out.
And like, John Lynch could probably win in a fight too. So, I mean, like, it comes down to it.
Shanahan looks like, not a football guy, really.
No, John Lynch, you could watch a good YouTube highlight video of him just like totally wrecking people. So outside of some front office workplace fighting, let's get on to four. Do we think that the Falcons stick with this pick? And if they do, what do they do with it?
I think they stick with it. I don't know how reliable Adam Schefter is specifically at draft stuff, specifically a few days before the draft, whenever he was quoted as saying 95% chance that Fields is available at seven. Like, Schefter's obviously plugged in and he's getting that information. Someone told him that, and he had reason, he thought, to believe them at the very least. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. 95 is a little bit high of a number for Schefter to be wrong about. Like, if he said 60, I'd maybe be a little more intrigued by the Fields possibility, but it'd be pretty surprising if Schefter were that wrong. I mean, maybe it's happened before. I can't really remember. He's not exactly Jay Glazer, but he's about the closest thing to it, I suppose. So I'm having to concede that the fourth pick is probably Pitts. I don't think it makes much sense unless certain other things are going to happen. Namely, I think they pretty much have to trade Julio Jones if they're going to draft Kyle Pitts, because Kyle Pitts is not going to play tight end like the Tennessee offense had tight end play. Like, he's not going to play Jonnu Smith. He's not going to play Michael Pruitt. He's not going to he's not going to do anything that's ever been in the NFL before, and it's especially won't be blocking tight end that he does. So it would have to be usage that occurs basically at receiver. And if you're running two tight ends all the time, then one of Pitts or Julio or Ridley is on the bench too much to make that pick make any sense otherwise. So if they can't move Julio, I don't know, like maybe Smith just does something different with Matt Ryan than he did with Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. Like maybe because they have no Henry and because Ryan can't move much, maybe he's going to go with more of like a three wide kind of offense rather than a 2-3 tight end kind of offense. Like maybe he built it that way specifically to spring Henry the way that they did. I don't really know, but I do know that Tennessee offense can't use Pitts, and even a modified version of it can't really make use of the players that they have. So there, of course, were those Julio rumors, and there very well could be something happening there. And if it does, and they get a decent return for it, then Pitts at four makes sense to me because Pitts is definitely a monster. He's going to be really good, but they're not, they shouldn't make that pick thinking, oh, we'll just figure quarterback out later. They should make that pick knowing this is kind of it for us. If this doesn't work, we're just going to get fired.
Yeah, no, that's wow. And that's quite a thought to have with basically a completely revamped front office and coaching staff, you know, having gotten rid of Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff this past year. So that would be wild. And then I think, you know, I don't know the exact details of it, but it sounds like Julio unlikely to be traded before June 1st. I think that there would be something with the cap with that. So the trade for Julio wouldn't happen until well after the draft. So that could leave us in a weird limbo.
They used to have that thing though, where you could just mark it as post June 1st, no matter what time of the year they're doing it. Is that no longer a thing? I don't know. If they can't do it that way, like you said, they can't trade him now. Like they either need to be just able to just say, actually, we're marking it post June 1st. And if they can't, then their cap space precludes it. Like Thomas Dimitroff totally ruined that team. It's just a godforsaken ruins in every aspect, including the cap, where they have basically nobody under contract and yet they're up against the cap.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable stuff there from Dimitroff. So we'll see how Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith can work their way out of that corner. Let's get on over to number five. We got the Cincinnati Bengals. The question on everyone's mind when it comes to the Bengals, I feel like it's been the, you know, Penei Sewell sweepstakes for a long time, and a lot of projection with him going to Cincinnati. But now I think there's a growing school of thought that Ja'Marr Chase could be the pick there as well. So which way are you leaning as far as the Sewell versus Chase when it comes to the Bengals?
I think it's Chase. I think both players are good and justifiable picks, but I think the debate around it, at least on Twitter, has been pretty mangled. I'm not sure many people are thinking it through all that clearly. But I think, sorry, forgive me, my screen's being a little goofy. So they signed already Riley Reiff to be the right tackle. They have Jonah Williams still, that eighth overall pick or whatever he was, who has both not been good, but he's also been beat up a lot. So it's a little unfair to just assume he's not good. And if you add Sewell, thing to say, sorry, to back up a bit, the debate has been framed around, like, are they going to improve the Cincinnati offensive line or improve the receivers, and which one will actually help Joe Burrow more? And it's kind of, it's just not really a valid choice as they present it, because adding Sewell isn't necessarily going to improve the offensive line. Like, he doesn't even turn 21 until October or something. So it's going to be hard for a player his age to be as good as a player as Williams.
Yeah, and he hasn't played in over a year.
Yeah, it's like Sewell would definitely be the better prospect than Williams, but as to what you actually get in 2021 is a very different question than who's the better long-term player. Like, Williams could be the better player for the next 2 years, and Sewell could, you know, run laps around him in that third, and it still wouldn't mean anything to the question of, like, what's going to help Burrow more right now. So there's a certain lack of, like, nuance and clarity to the way people are framing it, but to me, if you're talking about reps that are definitely going to improve, Chase is clearly the choice, because your alternative is whatever, Auden Tate or Mike Thomas or something. And of course, T. Higgins is a beast and Tyler Boyd's a very good slot receiver, but they're still going to have those wide receiver reps on the field. There is no third offensive tackle rep to distribute. If there were, then maybe we'd be talking, you know, one-to-one kind of deal. But as far as improving reps, it's Chase, and it's pretty obvious because it's not easy for a rookie offensive lineman, especially a left tackle, to play at the level of a veteran, almost any baseline veteran anyway. And Williams doesn't fall below the baseline more than likely. It's just he's been a disappointment as an eighth overall pick or whatever he was. It's not the same as being bad, and it's going to be hard for a player Sewell's age to catch him, especially because Sewell is not as good of a tackle prospect as a lot of people are talking about. This is
Smith. The bubble has burst a little bit as far as that is concerned. You know, he almost was reaching these like legendary stratosphere of hyperbole.
Not Joe Thomas, not Tyron Smith. He's more like a Jordan Gross, which is still an all pro player. But also Jordan Gross was probably like 3 years older when he got into the league, and he was polished. Like Sewell's going to take a little time to become the player that he's going to be.
I think that it's a hard to say that it would be a better long-term investment, but I think you can still take a long-term view when it comes to Sewell and the Bengals, because Reef is just going to be a 1 year option. So I think that if he is having those rookie struggles and isn't able to lock down whatever side Reef would be the one that's manning, that's fine. He can just develop, and you know, you can't count on Jonah Williams playing all 16 games either necessarily. So I think Sewell would be the right move, but I think you make a great argument for Chase as well. And it's not like he's only going to be valuable for 1 year. He's only going to get better from here. So I think that they're in a great
Sewell
spot.
Sewell would be a backup for them, I think. Like it's fine as a pick if you're planning on it that way, but it's like everybody keeps talking about it. You have to help Burrow. He got beat up so much last year. Like Sewell's not helping in 2021. He's giving them a high yield, like long-term asset, but yeah. 2021, if people want to make it about that, then Chase gets the reps sooner and he improves the reps sooner than whatever Sewell could. If Sewell is better than Jonah Williams or Reef, it's still not going to be as much of a magnitude as between Chase and Auden Tate or whatever the Bengals are down to.
Yeah, that's a good sticking point well taken. Let's get on over to number six. So assuming Chase is off the board, what do the Dolphins do?
I think it's got to be Jalen Waddle. I mean, if Kyle Pitts were there, that'd be, you know, take Pitts. He's insane. But I guess if he's at four, I think Waddle's the next kind of special player in the draft. I guess you could say that a guy like Micah Parsons could be, and he could very well be Miami's pick too. He's a pretty incredible athlete. Seems like he's got some talent as a football player to go with it, but he's not going to make Tua Tagovailoa any better, and he's not going to give them a long-term replacement for Will Fuller, who's on a 15-game contract. So I think Waddle is worth it generally, and I think in terms of playing the draft market and the Dolphins kind of setting themselves up for success, I think it's got to be him.
And I don't know if you knew this, but Tua and Jalen Waddle played together in college.
If that's true, then I think that it's pretty much a lock.
Yeah, sorry. I just threw a curveball at you like the day before the draft. Yeah, kind of rude of me as the host to pull such a maneuver. Let's get on over to seven. What's happening there? I mean, the Lions, they have a lot of needs. I've kind of circle receiver and corner as the big ones, but in this particular situation where both Chase and Waddle are off the board, I don't think there's a receiver worth taking at seven. Do they go with a corner in that case, or do they trade back?
So the Lions could go a lot of ways, and it's really hard to, or at least for me, it's hard to guess what way, because it just basically depends on how I don't know the guy's name, the GM that they got from the Rams. It's like he's going to have some plan in mind, and you could argue for kind of a wide range of plans if you're in his position, but it's only the one he cares about that's going to dictate anything. And yeah, I don't know how to discern what he actually cares about, because if you believe their presentation and like what Dan Campbell's been saying, you would think, oh, they're not going to take a quarterback. They're not going to take Fields, who Adam Schefter has said 95% will be at seven. So if you believe them about Goff, then they can't take Fields. And even if they don't believe in Goff, you could also argue that, you know, well, we're rebuilding anyway. Why start a rookie contract at quarterback? Let's just trade down and make the rest of the roster good. And then if we need to, we can trade back up for a quarterback in a year or two, or sign some free agents, or trade for somebody. They could be thinking a lot of different things, and they all have their own merits as long as they kind of do the steps right. But, you know, in my position, being as low on Goff as I am, I would say they should just take Fields, even if they have to put him on the bench and go a year or more pretending, actually, we love them both. And Jared's starting this year because we just think he's the best chance of winning right now. And you could, if you're doing it a certain way, you could do that and still get a good career out of Fields, and then maybe, you know, rehabilitate Goff's value for a year and flip him for like a fourth or a third next off season and give Fields the key to the team at that point. Or I will say it's like they probably can't really draft Fields and then let him compete with Goff. Like, they can't move Goff this year. They're on the hook for his money in a way that they'll lose money if they cut him. Whereas I think it's a year from now, maybe it's two, I can't remember. They can move Goff in the future where it's technically dead money, but it's not lost cap penalty. So that's where contracts kind of really get their pressure point at, and Fields could fit within that time frame model. But if they don't want Fields, then I guess what I'm going to project in this two-round mock that I had finished like an hour ago before that Teddy Bridgewater trade. I had Justin Fields going at 7 because the Patriots traded up, and I'm assuming they would give like a 2022 first-round pick, because the Patriots are clearly going in for, you know, the division title this year. And if they think that they have that kind of shot, they can justify the expense on Fields because they think their roster is already pretty good otherwise. And if it is, then that 2022 pick might be something like 24th to, you know, 27th overall, rather than like top 15 or something. So if they're going to go with this, you know, amoeba bash kind of offense with Cam Newton at quarterback, and then going with the very multiple tight end personnel and the multiple receiver personnel to try to kind of build like this pistol bash offense, then that's a lot to invest in for that model, to put all of it on Cam Newton. Like, I like Cam Newton a lot. I think he's going to pretty much rake this year, but he's got a concerning durability history, and they're not invested in him for the long term. So this model that they're building is built for Cam, and yet they're not committed to him. So it seems like if they're going to build that, if they're going to invest to that extent and that sort of kind of like personnel infrastructure, then they should be thinking about how they're going to go past Cam Newton too. And Fields might be their last chance to realize that.
Okay. So 7, definitely an inflection point. And to your point about the Lions and, you know, if Fields ends up in Detroit, you know, that'd be a comfort zone for Fields. He's used to getting somewhere where he's the best quarterback and then still having to sit behind, you know, hearkening back to his time at Georgia with Jake Fromm. Of course. Before we get on to the next team, to the eighth slot in the draft, we got a message from our friends over at Champions Round. Do you play fantasy football? Do you love the NFL draft? Well, you're in luck, because Champions Round has created a fantasy game specifically for the NFL draft, the Big Board Showdown. Playing is simple. Just pick 12 prospects, stay on budget, and watch your team rack up points based on when they're selected. Download the Champions Round app and make your picks today. Hashtag, you got next pick. All right, let's go with the eighth pick in the NFL draft. So we got the Carolina Panthers, or at least slotted in there. What's Carolina doing?
They also have quite a few ways they could go. And to go back a little bit to the Lions, if they're staying at 7, I think they would have to almost take a corner, just because Pat Surtain, J.C. Horn. I know Rashawn Slater, the offensive tackle, offensive guard, is projected kind of in this range too, but I think Surtain and Horn are probably better at their position than Slater. So, but if you're the Panthers and Fields go 7, then they could take Surtain. And I think both Surtain and Horn would make sense for the Panthers. And I don't mean to make myself sound like an expert on cornerback play or defensive scheming or anything, but reading the stuff of people that I trust, it seems like it's safe to say that Surtain's a little bit more scheme versatile, and specifically with respect to zone coverages, than Horn, who's apparently kind of just like a press man sort of player and maybe doesn't play off the receiver as well. So maybe J.C. Horn is a better fit, in other words, for a man coverage scheme like the Patriots, than he is the Panthers, who ran quite a bit of zone last year under Phil Snow, their defensive coordinator, but that might have been, that might have had to do with just like their lack of personnel at corner. Like they might have played zone because they just knew no one could cover, like Russell Douglas couldn't really cover. But there were also a couple games, a couple one-off matchups where they used Russell Douglas and Dante Jackson as shadow corners to match them up against specific receivers who basically kind of mirrored their traits. So it shows that they're willing to go to kind of like a matched up man coverage sort of thing if they have, if they think it's in their advantage to do it that week. So they could have an interest in Horn if they're planning on going with more man coverage. If they want to be more scheme versatile, maybe they go with Sertan. I also think that the Panthers are a really good candidate to trade back. So, oh, I should have mentioned the Lions could trade back for the Chargers to trade up for Sewell in this scenario. And if they don't, if Fields goes seven, then I think eight's a really good spot for Sewell to go. Maybe for the Panthers, but I think also the Panthers would be looking to trade down, and that the Chargers, there's been some people who have sources have been saying that the Chargers might be looking to trade up for Sewell, and I think the Panthers would make a lot of sense there. So what I'm actually projecting in my mock is, I can't remember what I did. If it, I know I said Fields to seven, but what I might have actually done is Fields to eight and Sewell to seven, but I kind of like those two to go at those two picks, and for Carolina to go back to, you know, 12 or 15 or whatever.
Okay. Carolina definitely a bit of a trade back candidate, like you mentioned, but if they stay put, corner could definitely be in play as well. Let's get on over to nine. So that one's shaken up a little bit today in light of the Teddy Bridgewater trade that you alluded to. I think it's still possible that Denver goes quarterback. Adam Schefter said something along those lines as well. It's not like they have a ton of money committed necessarily to the combination of, you know, rookie contract Drew Lock and, you know, Carolina eating a fair bit of Bridgewater's deal as well. So I don't think they're precluded from it. But in this scenario, you know, you'd also have Micah Parsons available. So which way do you think Denver goes before we move on to the next crew?
Yeah, they traded for Bridgewater, but maybe they did that because they didn't think Mac Jones or Justin Fields would be there. So maybe if Fields or Jones is there, they'll just take that guy. If they go defense, I think it'll be Parsons. I think Fangio could really use a guy like him. It seems like Micah Parsons is a bit of a psycho, but I don't think that most coaches would care, especially since it hasn't gotten much publicity in the media, what he's accused of having done.
It's very easy to find on Google, too. So
very easy to find, and it's just not really in the media narrative. So if it's not in the narrative, no one's going to care. There won't be any outrage about it. Instead, people will focus on how he's an insane athlete with a ton of upside in a lot of defensive functions. So either Parsons or maybe they go with like an edge defender. I guess Jalen Phillips could be in play if teams aren't worried about his medicals. I'm pretty worried about his medicals. So I think it'll be Parsons.
Okay. All right. Let's get on over to the 10th pick in the draft. This has been one that I feel like everyone in the mock draft community has been kind of in lockstep on. I alluded to such in my mock earlier this week. If you're not mocking Pat Surtain to the Cowboys, and is it really a mock draft? Is it going to be Pat Surtain?
So he's often been projected to the Broncos at 9-2, but the Broncos are actually pretty well off at corner after can't remember who they added, but Bryce Callahan's good, and they got the other one that they picked up. And Fangio can do money ball at corner. He's really good at coaching zones at corner. He doesn't need a Pat Surtain to get good cornerback results. Dallas probably needs Pat Surtain or J.C. Horn to get better corner results. So I give them Pat Surtain here, but I think J.C. Horn would make a lot of sense too. It kind of just depends on if Dallas is going to be scheme versatile, if they're going to kind of go with a man coverage emphasis like the Rams or the Patriots. And if they go more zone, then Surtain's, I guess, the easier call.
All right. And then, you know, that decision could also be made for them a little bit by, you know, what the Lions end up doing at seven. Yeah. And if seven ends up staying in Detroit, they could certainly go corner. And then Dallas has less of a headache to deal with. And, you know, they can get one of J.C. Horn or Patrick Surtain and be plenty happy with it. The Giants are up next. They're a little bit tougher to figure out they don't have a terrible roster on both sides, but they still have Daniel Jones, but they can't really do anything about that. So I think bolstering the offensive line would make some sense. What say you when it comes to the Giants at 11?
I think the Giants want Micah Parsons, and I think they might even be assuming he'll be there. But if he goes at nine, or 10, whatever, then I think they're in a tough spot because they are pretty loaded actually at most positions. Like, they don't have a need at receiver. I think they're going to move Evan Engram in the draft and have Kyle Rudolph basically be like a sixth lineman kind of player so they can get more targets at Galladay and Slayton, Shepard and Barkley. So their secondary is pretty solid. Maybe third corner can be improved, but that's not traditionally a spot where you buy a third corner, especially after you got Adoree Jackson. So right. I think they might go edge defender, and this would be a bit of a reach for most people. But if not Jalen Phillips, who I guess is kind of like the favored sort of pick for that, I think Jason Owe might make more sense than people think, if only because they have some bodies already at outside linebacker. Like, he wouldn't play more than 500 snaps or something. So even if he's raw, they can keep him situational and let him keep learning. But I also think there's a chance that a guy like Owe, being such an insane athlete, just kind of shows up to the NFL a lot better than he was in college, just because he's, I don't know, there's never been an athlete like him. The closest thing to him is Manny Lawson, who was only serviceable. But Lawson was like 6'6", 240 with like a mid 4'4 or something. Owe's pushing 260 and does a 4.38. Like, maybe he's the biggest workout warrior bust of all time, but he needs to be that to be like a failure. It's like he can be pretty bad at playing linebacker and defensive end and still be better, more productive than most people, because he's like a Megatron kind of athlete at defensive end.
Okay, you got to say the line though when it comes to Jason Owe.
What is the line?
He had no sacks last year.
He had no sacks. You got to mention. It was six or seven games is the thing, yeah. And he had a good amount of tackles for loss, and he had seven sacks the 2 years before.
But everyone, you got to say it, though. It's like it's a fair concern. Of the deal. Like,
he's raw. He's definitely raw. Vic Fangio would make a star out of him. Maybe Joe Judge can, too. I don't know. But I think it's going to be hard for a player as athletic as him to be a totally useless NFL player. It just seems almost impossible to me.
Yeah, no, he can definitely create some chaos. It's important to not get overly fixated on the goose egg in the sack department. We've seen other guys with shaky production end up as edge defenders in college, end up being good. It looks like Rashawn Gary might end up panning out in Green Bay, even though he really didn't do a whole lot in the box score during his time at Michigan. Let's get on over to 12. That should be the Philadelphia Eagles. You think they stay there? And if so, what are they doing? What do they need?
They could look to trade back, I guess. They could look to trade up, apparently. I don't know what they'd be. Like, I would assume Pitts, I suppose, but that seems out of reach. So if they're staying at 12, I think Rashawn Slater would make a lot of sense. It's hard to tell how much they like Andre Dillard. Like, it seems a little bit hysterical to me the way some people say he's terrible, because he had the bad rookie year and then he didn't play last year. And having a bad rookie year as an offensive tackle is very common, and it doesn't mean you're bad necessarily. But with Slater, they get versatility, flexibility, because they can take him into camp, and if they see Dillard look bad in camp, they can say, all right, Slater's the left tackle now. And if they get to camp and Dillard looks all right, then they'll say, all right, well, you're going to play at guard then Slater over a Simatalo or whatever that guy's name is. And if they trade Brandon Brooks, then at guard at the other spot would make enough sense. But basically, the Eagles have a potential need at guard and left tackle, and Slater pretty obviously fits that. If not him, then I would guess a corner, the remainder of Horn or Sertan, I suppose.
Okay, yeah, I think grabbing Slater would be awesome. I think that he's versatile enough to play either tackle or guard it in the NFL. So versatile piece there to add to, you know, what was a great offensive line in Philly that has kind of aged out and obviously showed some flaws last year. Not that it really helped that Carson Wentz, you know, loves to just run into sacks anyway. That kind of, you know, muddies up how that offensive line performed a little bit potentially for some people a year ago. Chargers, they hit the home run last year with going with Justin Herbert. They could go receiver here. I think that they have two great receivers or very good receivers in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, but adding a third, I think, would be a really, really nice move. I think that especially if Rashawn Slater is off the board, they should think very hard about adding another weapon around Justin Herbert. I think the defense top to bottom is pretty strong. It doesn't have an obvious glaring weakness, in my opinion. Kenneth Murray, their other first round selection from last year, looked good. They get Derwin James back healthy, hopefully. So this is a Chargers team that's really, really interesting. Could go a lot of different ways. What do you think they'd end up doing?
Yeah, I think they'll either get Sewell in a trade up, or if they can't trade up, they'll maybe trade up for Slater. But also, if they don't trade up for Sewell, I think Slater makes it to 13. So
okay,
it's going to be one of those two. I think Tyron Johnson can be a pretty good receiver for them. But yeah, if they go with Devontae Smith or something, that wouldn't be terribly shocking.
Okay, all right. So a couple different ways that likely offensive line, but also receiver could be in play there when it comes to the Chargers. Vikings up next. They were a slightly tough team to project in the mock as well, going at 14. They do. So which one stands out the most to you with 13 guys off the board?
Well, you gave them in your prior mock draft Elijah Vera Tucker, and that's kind of thing that would make enough sense. Like, their offensive line is pretty concerning in a couple of spots, and he might be able to contribute at more than one spot. Otherwise, obviously, Jeff Gladney had that really disturbing arrest, and he might be out of the league pretty soon. So that was first-rounder last year. If J.C. Horn somehow falls to 14, that's going to be pretty tough for them to pass up. If Horn is gone and Sertan is gone, then you're looking, I think, at defensive line or offensive line. And I don't know what they might, what kind of urgency they might have about their offensive line. I think it's in Mike Zimmer's nature, at least, to lobby for the defense. And I don't know whether he wants a quitty pay Jalen Phillips type, Jason Owe maybe even. I don't know if he wants an edge player. I don't know if there's still any lingering anxiety about Danielle Hunter and what he's going to do this year, where he's going to play this year. But if they believe in Hunter playing this year, then they could wait on defensive end and try to go with some sort of stopgap approach there. If they don't think Hunter's going to be around, then they pretty much have to take an end. And I guess it would be Pay or Phillips or Owe. Otherwise, I think this is a good dark horse spot for Christian Barmore at defensive tackle, just because they signed Michael Pierce, but he can only first he opted out last year, which might lead to some sour grapes on the part of Mike Zimmer. And Michael Pierce, even at his best, even in theory, doesn't play more than like 450 snaps, because you don't really want him out there on passing down. So if they pick Barmore at 14, I don't think that would be shocking, because he's probably playing 700 plus snaps if they take him there, and they're not very good at defensive tackle otherwise.
Yeah. So I think that would Tomlinson. Definitely.
Sorry, they got Tomlinson, but they don't have any like disruptor at defensive tackle. It's like Tomlinson's kind of like a two gap block eater the way Pierce is.
Okay. All right. So that would add a different type of space eater in the middle that could be a little bit more disruptive, maybe collapse the pocket. So yeah, Barmore, that could definitely be a strong pick as well. 15 Patriots. As it stands, if they don't make a trade up and they're sitting there at 15, which way could they go?
If they don't trade up for Fields, I think this would be a good spot for Eric Stokes at corner. Otherwise, Devontae Smith, I guess, something like that.
Okay. They still need some receiver help as well, even though they made a bunch of splash moves in free agency. 16, Cardinals. They lost Patrick Peterson this offseason. I thought corner would make plenty of sense, especially with how deep this class is at corner, especially at the top. I gave him Greg Newsome out of Northwestern, so our second Northwestern guy of the top half of the first round. What do you make of the Cards' needs here?
Yeah, they need speed at corner. They signed Malcolm Butler, but him and Byron Murphy are both almost like cover two kind of athletes at corner. They don't have anyone who can run even a little bit, which seems like a problem in that division to me, especially with Stafford there now. But in my mock that I'm going to post after this, I'm giving them Eric Stokes. I just think people are underrating Eric Stokes. I can't remember the last time a corner was as big as him, with arms as long as his, with the speed and athleticism that he has. After playing in a good pass defense in the SEC as probably the best defensive back on that defense, and people act like he's maybe a second rounder, like a give or take second rounder, and that's not a standard that has been applied to any corner like him in the past. So I kind of like the idea of him going a little higher than people think, and people might call it a reach or whatever, but I think he'd be the best pick Arizona can make here. Otherwise, Newsome would make a lot of sense, like you said, because he's definitely an athlete.
Yes, he's had some durability concerns of his own, but Newsome, I mean, but I think that he would be a totally fine play there. And yeah, I agree with you. Stokes is underrated, and I do think that he's a better option than his teammate Tyson Campbell. Although Campbell's a fine day two guy, but I don't like him over Stokes necessarily. 17, the Raiders. Apparently not taking anyone that opted out this past year. So that takes a couple guys off the board. What do you think the Raiders would do here at 17?
I really don't know. I think that a lot of things make sense for them because their team sucks, but they're kind of like the Giants thing where they don't have actionable needs. But unlike the Giants, it's not because they have good players. It's just that they've spent a bunch of money last year on Corey Littleton and he was terrible at linebacker, but what are they going to do? Eat probably like $8 million in cap penalty or something. So linebacker's not obvious. It would make sense from a improving the rep standpoint, but from the finance standpoint, I'm not sure how much that factors in, but I'm going to give them in my mock draft, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, whatever his name is, from Notre Dame. Cause he could play linebacker. He could play safety. He could maybe even do kind of like slot coverage kind of thing. Some of the stuff that they wanted LaMarcus Joyner to do when they spent that big contract on him, that was a total waste. So they could get him, I think, on the field a little more easily at kind of like safety reps. So like not putting Littleton on the bench, in other words. But yeah, they have needs. It's just they can't really draft at most of them because they're still trying to justify bad investments that they already made at the spot in recent years. But if not a player like Owusu-Koramoa, maybe then like a right tackle, because they don't really have a right tackle at this point after trading Trent Brown back to the Patriots or whatever they did.
Yeah, the whole just entire line change dump of their offensive line, other than Colton Miller this offseason, definitely a weird one. Maybe ostensibly they have a plan for that, and maybe a plan is taking one of these offensive linemen here in the first round.
I guess Barmore would make sense too.
Okay, let's go 18. We got the Dolphins. This is their second pick. They just subtracted an offensive lineman yesterday. So what could be in play for the Dolphins? Do you think that they go with, like, in this particular scenario, like a Darisaw would make sense?
It depends, I guess, on just what they think of Robert Hunt, who played a lot of right tackle last year. He was a guard, or he played tackle at Lafayette or Monroe, whichever it was.
Lafayette, Louisiana. ULL. Yeah, 10 different names.
Yeah, them. He played for them at tackle, and then he played tackle as a rookie, but a lot of people were thinking he'd be a guard in the NFL. So maybe the Dolphins are looking to move him inside. Maybe they're sticking with him at right tackle. I don't really know. I think either way, the pick might be Elijah Vera Tucker, because if he's there, I mean. But Elijah Vera Tucker played left guard next to Austin Jackson at USC, and I know a lot of people hate Austin Jackson and draft Twitter, and a lot of like scout type people on Twitter hate him, but I actually think that was a pretty good pick because he's just really young and he's so toolsy that it's like, because you're playing at a 2-year disadvantage in the Pac-12, probably in the best era of Pac-12 defenses in a long time. Like that to me is excusable. But they also have to realize like there's a bust risk with a guy like that. Like you need to kind of nurture his development to make the good case scenario occur. And having a guy that he played next to in college, I think will both be good for Vera Tucker and Austin Jackson, because offensive line continuity has a lot to do with how good an offensive line will look. Like there needs to be some level of chemistry there, and it's not always naturally occurring between players. You sometimes just need history.
Yeah, no, that would line up really, really nicely if those two were able to be reunited and have them working at tackle and guard together on the left side for Miami. Pick 19, the Washington football team. They have an interesting dilemma, and obviously, like, I don't think their quarterback situation is set long term, but I think it's okay enough for this year as it stands. They could always add some receiver help. They could go a bunch of different directions here. There isn't a good enough tight end depth in this class to justify a pick at 19. I think that they could, if Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa was available there at 19, I would love the fit for him in Washington. I think that would make for an even more athletic front, but that wouldn't be the case in this particular mock. So where do you think they go?
Well, he'd be a good pick, like you said. I guess I don't know what they think of Kalik Hudson. He's a kind of similar player, but he was like a 7th-round pick last year. I think they should probably take Darisaw or whoever their top left tackle is, just because Sadiq Charles, I think, should be good, but he looks like a guard. So they just don't really have anything at left tackle, if that's the case. And Darisaw seems like he's pretty good, has kind of like the prerequisite athletic traits or whatever. Otherwise, if Tevin Jenkins is still there, he would be maybe a worthwhile consideration. But I think Jenkins could go either to the Raiders, or if the Panthers trade back from 8 to 13, I could imagine even them taking him, okay, something like that.
So a couple different directions. Offensive line, they could potentially have their pick there of that like second tier, or third tier, however you view it, of tackle. That could definitely work. 20. The Bears, I thought were maybe at Bears at 20 was one of the toughest teams to mock. I gave them Rashad Bateman. I didn't feel great about it, but it just looking at the rest of the roster, it seemed to make sense, especially with the way that I had the chips falling. But I could see it going so many different ways for the Bears. How about yourself?
They could use an offensive tackle. They could use a corner now that they lost Kyle Fuller to protect Jimmy Graham's contract. They could take Mac Jones if he falls within reach, yeah, too.
And we know that Bears Twitter would really, really love that.
A big improvement for them, even though it still kind of sucks.
Yeah. It would just be so not exciting, but we'll see. 21, Indianapolis. I think the tackle becomes a priority after Costanzo's retirement. What say you?
Yeah, Sam Cosmi from Texas, Tevin Jenkins, if he's there, would be a pretty easy call. Maybe Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, something like that. But it seems like they kind of need a left tackle if they don't have some sort of trade that they're cooking up.
Yep, so we're in agreement there. 22, Titans. I think corner and receiver stand out as their biggest needs. How about you?
They still need a right tackle. They lost Isaiah Wilson, and they don't really have a replacement. So I could see them taking an offensive tackle, maybe even reaching for a guy like Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa, just because he's big running athletic type. They need corner. I think there's a little depth at corner, so maybe they can wait. And I don't know what they plan to do at receiver. I could imagine Anthony Firkser being their main slot guy and Josh Reynolds outside. But whatever pick they make, I bet it'll be pretty bad for some reason.
I like that. I mean, reasonable expectations to be casting out there when it comes to the Titans. Yeah, that things could get ugly for them in a hurry. Yeah,
Vrabel's in way over his head. He's completely clueless.
Of the playoff teams that made it last year, you know, I think the Titans and Bears are the ones that you'd handicap as the ones that are the least likely to make it again this year.
If Tennessee has a shot getting back, it's only because of the Texans being in their division.
Yep, just bank a few wins off of them. 23, this would be the Jets' second pick. Is it ETN?
It could be. It could be Najee Harris. It could be Owusu-Koramoah if he's there. It could be an edge rusher. I think it's not going to be an offensive lineman, and I don't think it's going to be a receiver. It could be a corner. There's still needs of that team, and Saleh being a defensive guy, he might kind of prefer to go that way, even though they theoretically need to build around Wilson. They have plenty of needs on defense all the same.
Right. And like you said, Saleh's defensive mind, maybe he has a guy that really fits his system that would be available there at 23. 24, this one has been bandied about a fair bit. Is it Najee Harris to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
It could be. I want to say there are some people around the Jaguars who have said that Urban Meyer's not very high on James Robinson and may even be looking to trade him. I think if they are going to trade him, the Steelers make a ton of sense, both for not so much the Jaguars. Urban Meyer's going to probably be a bad coach if he does this. I think it shows that he doesn't know what he's really getting into, doesn't understand the ecosystem that he stepped into. But the Steelers' offensive line is trash. Like they got to replace Pouncey. They got to replace Villanueva at left tackle. The other spots aren't that great either. They have needs at corner. They obviously could use a quarterback prospect. I think it would be pretty insane for them to take a running back in the first round. And I love when running backs go in the first round because that makes some of my least favorite people in the world very angry.
Yes.
When they do. But I don't think they should take Harris. Like if they can, they should trade like a fourth or a third for James Robinson and then load up an offensive line.
Well, that's a crazy detail about Jacksonville, especially after like the found money element of having an undrafted guy be as good as James Robinson was a year ago. But, you know, that's why we're sitting here talking on a live stream, I suppose. Jacksonville, 25. I gave them Trayvon Mooring. I know it's not the best safety class, and that kind of ends up being a windfall for Jacksonville here. Potentially, they could get the best safety in the class here at 25. What say you?
Yeah, the best safeties look like Morig and Javon Holland from Oregon. So I don't know how much teams are looking for safeties, but if they're gunning for one, they probably need to reach for those two at the risk of coming out empty-handed. I think, though, this pick will be Travis Etienne.
Okay, now that would be an awesome pairing to have Lawrence and Etienne back reunited right away after leaving Clemson. 26, Cleveland. I think they could just shop this pick. I don't think they really have a ton of needs, but if they do, I think it's inside linebacker. They could kind of, you know, other than Parsons, I think they would have their pick of the litter there, depending on how you feel about like Jameen Davis or Nick Bolton. But I think inside linebacker makes sense for Cleveland at 26. Maybe you have a different thought.
I think that edge would make a lot of sense. I think Quiddy Pay, Jalen Phillips, if Jason Owe is there, they could all be in play. And this is just me making a wild guess, but it sounds like the Patriots are shopping Stephon Gilmore, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the second round the Patriots and the Browns do something like Gilmore and the Patriots third rounder for the Cleveland second rounder, something like that. And if they get a good edge player and if they ideally get a little bit better of cornerback reps than Greedy Williams, that defense could get really good really fast.
Yeah, it's already coming together pretty nicely for Cleveland. 27, I guess that this would be the Ravens. What do they do?
So they got two first rounders. I think they're going to take an offensive lineman and a defensive end type. It just seems like Aziz Ojulari. Ojulari's in that range. Joseph Asai is in that range. There could be Owe. There could be others. I think it makes a lot of sense to strike that position in that with their two first rounders. And then
going
the
right
other
after
one,
my heart right there.
Yeah, I think other than the edge defender that I'm assuming they take, I think the other one will be an offensive lineman, either Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma or Landon Dickerson from Alabama, I would guess.
Okay, yeah, they definitely need some help along the offensive line, of course, in wake of the Orlando Brown trade, although interior was a big problem for them last year as well, and that's why a guy like Dickerson, Creed Humphrey, would definitely work as well. Let's move quickly through these last couple of ones here. We got the Saints at 28. Do you think they go receiver?
Receiver or corner? I'm giving them Elijah Moore.
Oh, I would love that. 29, Packers. What's up?
I could use an interior offensive lineman. They lost Lindsley. I like your pick, Zaven Collins. I actually have them trading up for him in my mock.
Oh, sweet. Okay. All right. So that panned out. Yeah, Zaven Collins would be really, really interesting. I think they could use some help there. And Collins could give it to him. 30, Bills. What are they doing?
Corner or edge rusher. Eric Stokes, if he's there, would be a steal of a century, I think. But otherwise, Greg Newsom, maybe even Campbell, the other Georgia corner.
Okay. We're getting close to the end here. 31, this would be the Ravens' other selection, so it would likely address
Dickerson, Humphrey, or the edge guys, I think.
Okay, and then the Bucs famously have like everybody back, so
yeah. I think they will take Jason Owe if he's on the board, so I kind of hope he won't be there, because it's one of those things you can tell whoever they get is going to be some really good player they basically don't deserve. So I would love for them to take some sort of low upside player that can't just, because if it comes down to luck, they're just gonna be lucky bastards like they are, you know. So I really don't want them getting some toolsy guy who everyone thinks sucks, because they're gonna turn out awesome and they're gonna get them for free, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's good times in Tampa Bay if you're a Bucs fan, of course. I want to throw to one last thing here. We just ran through the entire first round. There are props at pretty much every major sports book pertaining to the NFL draft. Some interesting ones, some ones with some value in my mind. J.C. Horn as a top 10 pick out of South Carolina at +110 at the DraftKings Sportsbook. I think that makes sense. I think there's enough teams with corner needs going in the top 10 to where I like J.C. Horn to be there. I think he's one of the first two corners off the board. The line on Justin Fields has moved since yesterday. His over-under was 8.5. Now it's 7.5. So take that for what you will. I'm probably staying away from that from a betting perspective, but it's interesting nonetheless that his line is moving. You were on this one, Mario. You also wrote a props piece last week. Christian Barmore, who was a +800 to be the first defensive lineman off the board when you wrote, plus 400 now. So that's it goes to show that you potentially were ahead of the market there and had a good one potentially.
Don't do the Jamar Chase one in that article. I bet I am off that now.
Okay, we're back.
Pitts is the first non-quarterback off the board. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. One I also had some fun with. There's one on DraftKings by conference over under. For players going in the first round. So for instance, the SEC's over under is 12.5. I counted it up. I think there are 17 players from the SEC that could go in the first round. You could know my background or look at my hair right now and think that I have SEC bias. No, I just think it's empirically true that the SEC has a really, really strong
Everyone
class.
Everyone knows there's at least six Georgia Bulldogs that are going to go in the first, probably at least that.
Oh, they should have won a title at some point, but oh well. But also Pac-12 2.5. I would take the under on that. I think that there's just going to be Sewell and Elijah Vera Tucker. I don't think that either of the Washington defensive line projects are going to be taken in the first round, even though I mocked Owunzariki to the Bucks in my last mock. I think I squinted too hard at that one. I think that it will go in a different direction. So under 2.5, but that one's at like create. It's like minus 360 or something. So not a ton of value there, but that's going to wrap things up for this edition. Our final one before the NFL draft officially kicks off. So again, fun stuff as always, Mario, and we've seen a lot of you over these next few days as we rock this out for the 2021 NFL draft.
Yeah, it's got to go to the pick mines now. We're not going to be out for like a week.
Yep, we're going to get all sooty, and we're going to come out on the other side of this victorious. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire NFL podcast.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.